If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast about Star Trek by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a podcast about Star Trek. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, the sound you're hearing behind me is chainsaws. Chainsaws and wood chippers. Because
You have a bunch of murderers from various horror films and Fargo near your house?
Yeah, I'm recording today on a studio lot. where all that practical sound is happening. It's really great. It's great for podcast recording.
Awesome.
I've set up a couple of light stands and a big blanket behind me. I'm hoping that knocks down the noise a little bit. But if I sound anything less than my usual best, that's why.
Okay. This is a classic Boy Who Cried Wolf, and an axe murderer is going to come in, and I'm just going to think it's one of the many crazy sounds that was naturally in your environment and not call the police.
All of our interstitial music should just be chainsaw related. All right.
Oh, yeah. That one Limp Bizkit song.
Oh, shit. How dare you? We will not. Today's episode is about season one, episode 14. Is that 14? I want to get that right. Oh, yeah. Season 1, episode 14. Episode title is Angel 1. Ben, you want to take us through?
Yeah. So I guess the ship has... They've come across the wreck of a freighter called the Odin, which they thought it was crashed 7 years ago. They find this wreck, and they discover that some escape pods have been used. So they decide to head over to this planet, Angel One, which the Federation hasn't visited in decades, but it's the closest, you know, habitable planet to where the wreck of the Odin was found, and they're going to look for some survivors. So they approach this planet, you know, with some caution because Angel One is not a spacefaring species yet. They're similar technology level to 20th century Earth and very similar species to humans, but they're, you know, not in the Federation. A lot of prime directive stuff is going to come into play with any interaction with a species like this. And they get on FaceTime with the head of... I guess they don't get on FaceTime, do they? They just radio up the head of Angel One and arrange to beam down to negotiate for the right to even look around for these survivors.
Right, and they decide to let Troy take the lead on this. They talk amongst themselves and they're like, "Well, planet run by women, a good foot forward might be to let Troy take the lead on this." And so that's what they do.
Yeah, exactly. So this is an oligarchy, I think Data says, that's with women at the top, and you know, all of the things that are normal to us in our patriarchal society are flipped on their darned heads in this Angel One planet.
Yeah, there's really a powerful message being told here.
Yeah. So I guess Riker, Yar, Troy and Data beam down to the planet and they meet the Elected One, or is that what she was called? The Elected One?
I don't know. I don't know.
Whatever the top dog in their society.
Sarah Connor from Terminator. That's who she is. That's what we can call her. Everyone knows
who
that
actress.
Is.
Yeah, it's a different actress, but it's a very similar, like, Amy Adams, Isla Fisher type of situation where you could see them both being cast in a lot of the same kinds of parts because they are hard to tell apart.
Yeah.
And she's initially really not even interested in admitting whether these survivors being around is a possibility. And they're pretty standoffish. They seem to have a real chip on their shoulders about the Federation, despite the fact that the Federation really hasn't, like, spent much time interacting with them. These are just kind of plot points. They eventually admit that these refugees from the destruction of the Odin did in fact land on Angel One 7 years ago, and they've been declared fugitives because they don't really fit into the social structure of this female-dominated society. And we should say that, like, the casting of this is pretty fun. Like, all of the women are, like, really statuesque. They tend to be very tall and very lovely.
They're wearing super tall boots, too. Like, yeah. That's part of it.
Yeah, I guess so. But all of the dudes that that we see that are, you know, native inhabitants of Angel One are super, super short. Like,
they're male gymnasts short.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, we are the jockeys, and the jockeys are we short. We don't ever see where they live. We can assume underground in a fiberglass tree.
Yeah, yeah, they all look of or related to Clay Aiken, I feel like, too. There's some definite Aiken vibes.
Mm-hmm. So the away team really stand out down here.
Do you feel like Riker's finally home?
Yeah,
he couldn't get out of his seat fast enough to go to the transporter room. Like, he was ready for this.
This is a sexual challenge that I don't even know if Riker had ever considered, but he's really up for it.
The main character question for Riker is, can I take on an entire planet?
Yeah, that is every scene. That's the subtext. So what they learn from Beata is that, you know, the incredibly rigid hierarchical social structure that they have here on Angel One has been deteriorating over the years, but the Federation refugees sort of catalyzed an acceleration in the decline, and that's why they're considered sort of enemies of the state.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So you get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Meanwhile, back on the ship, Wesley is getting into some hijinks playing snowball fights on the holodeck and hits Picard in the face with a snowball that, you know, I guess they threw it and didn't see that the captain and Commander Worf were... I guess Worf is still just a lieutenant.
Yeah.
Captain and Lieutenant Worf are walking around in the hallways nearby. But
Ben, do we know where the holodecks are in relation to, like, the ship structure itself? It seems like when you walk by the holodecks, you should sort of get that at any point a door might open and you are either hit with a snowball or something far worse.
Seriously. I know that Holodeck 3 is near main engineering, because that's where Geordi always sets up his simulations. But I that means that there's at least two more, and I have no idea where they are on the ship.
Man, that is some knowledge right there.
Yeah, that's...
It's impressive.
That's knowledge that has me forgetting when my father's birthday is, kind of knowledge, you know?
That's great. Sorry, Ben's dad. I think you probably guessed that your birthday would be forgotten when Ben started calling himself Wesley.
Boy, I hope he's not a listener to this show.
So he gets hit by a snowball. So does Worf, right? Or does Worf just get the snowball shrapnel?
I think Worf gets the shrapnel, but as Picard shoos Wesley and his little friend away, they smell a smell that reminds Worf of some Klingon flower, I guess. And
which has got to be like the corpse flower, right?
Right. And what winds up happening is that this is an airborne virus that starts kind of sweeping through the ship, and you know, Worf is pretty soon sick with it. You know, I think Wesley comes down with it first, but then Worf has it. Eventually Picard has it, and he has to leave the bridge. Like, this is the first time that Crusher actually takes Picard out of the command structure with a medical order, because he's got a pretty raging head cold, and Picard leaves the bridge and puts Geordi in command. And there's a very funny scene where Geordi goes and sits in the big chair, and it's like they really play it for like hey, like, look at what a cool show we are that we let a black character be in command very temporarily.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit I felt that moment tinged with weight. in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great for the character of Geordi, but I really felt the producers patting themselves on the back in a way that kind of skeeved me out.
Hey, viewer, remember that super racist episode we had, like, five back? We're trying to make up for it.
Here is something that will only fractionally undo some of the really serious harm that we caused.
Yeah, gross.
The away team goes and meets with Ramsay, the leader of the... the Odin's survivors, and
let's name the male protagonist figure on the planet after a popular brand of condom. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe they were thinking of that name for a Riker before they decided it was a little too on the nose.
Oh, that would be great.
But since they're citizens of the Federation but not members of Starfleet, the survivors. Of whom Ramsay is the only one that gets really any screen time to speak of. They refuse to go back to the Federation. They've made lives here. Some of them have wives and families. They recognize that the society that they have adopted is super unjust and fucked up, but it feels like home to them. And because they are free citizens and don't, they don't like exist within Starfleet's command structure. Starfleet doesn't really have any jurisdiction to remove them against their will. So
I thought Ramsay's was, I'm just going to keep calling him Ramsay's, right? That's his name. Ramsay.
Something like that.
Singular.
Yeah.
We can cut all that out. I thought Ramsay was one of the coolest looking people that we've seen yet. Like, yeah, he looks like David Lee Roth. He's got an awesome biker jacket. Like, he's super brooding. Like he's sort of heroic.
Yeah, he's definitely got the same jacket as Poe Dameron loses at the beginning of Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a cool-ass jacket, and you wouldn't think less of a stormtrooper for stealing it from you. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he's drinking mead out of one of those, like, big iron cups. I mean, he's been living on his own for 8 years. Yeah. I don't know, the guy seems real cool.
Yeah, he's chill as fuck. He's, like, living in a cave, swilling on a tankard, and standing up for what's his.
He sort of looks like he's living Riker's dream at the moment.
Yeah, he's surrounded by babes.
Marooned on a planet made up entirely of powerful women, and there's no escape.
Yeah.
Yeah, Riker's just standing behind some foliage to cover up his boner.
Yeah. Riker's like, this isn't a plot. This is a holodeck program.
He's just pinching himself the entire time.
So this is a real conundrum, because if they, they can't violate these guys' rights by removing them, but by leaving them there, it, means that they're potentially imperiling a relationship they have with this planet, which is considered strategically important in the quadrant. And it's a real conundrum. So meanwhile, pressure is building back on the ship, because more and more crew members are being incapacitated, and they've gotten word from Starfleet that shit's starting to heat up at the neutral zone. So the Romulans are building up a fleet on the edge of Federation space, and there's another ship and an outpost out there, but they're not really any match for what the Romulans are flexing. And the Enterprise is required to head over there and put on a show of force.
We're made to think that the Romulans might be as dangerous as the Ferengi at this point.
Potentially. So they send Data back up to the ship, because obviously he's not susceptible to this specific disease, even though he was susceptible to one earlier. And Riker's orders are like, get to the neutral zone before it's too late, and put a stop to this situation, then you can come back and get us and we'll resolve this. But that puts the survivors in a bad situation, because the Sarah Connor character has ordered the execution of all of the survivors of the Odin and all of the wives that they have taken to kind of put a stop to this problematic movement within their society and culture.
The demonstration of their execution machine is great. It's sort of like yeah. in Data Lore, how Lore wanted to transport a tree outside and then shoot it with a phaser to demonstrate the Enterprise's power. Yeah. Sarah Connor just puts a big potted plant in the suicide booth and then hits a button and then destroys the plant. It's
no,
great.
she doesn't hit a button. It's her like her little
It's Clay Aiken.
Her little Clay Aiken guy lowers his hand slowly onto a crystal ball which starts glowing red, and then the potted plant like evaporates into thin air.
Everyone's like, holy shit.
Riker makes this impassioned plea for the lives of the survivors, saying, like, don't do this. Like, even if, you know, it's obviously your right to do whatever you want as the elected leader of your society, and that's the way the law works here. But if you kill these guys, you're going to make martyrs out of them, and that's really stupid and not worth it. And she, like, bounces out of there to consider his idea, and they come back and announce that they're going to take Ramsey and all of his followers and banish them to the far side of the planet, where life will be hard, but they won't have any interaction with the oligarchy, and they won't threaten Sarah Connor's rule.
Yeah, like, it's sort of a weird, it's not quite a happy ending. It's like, she basically cops to the idea that they want to slow the evolution of their society, and this is how they're going to do it, by basically marooning these people out in the middle of nowhere. So, I guess that'll work. And Riker gets a good lawyer moment. I think this is his first time really, like, stating a case eloquently.
Yeah, he makes...
When he's not trying to bone someone.
Yeah.
I guess maybe he's so eloquent now because he got that tension out of his system
yeah.
about 20 minutes before.
Yeah, he's in a refractory period, and that makes his words a lot more appealing to the women of Angel One.
Yeah. One of the most fun scenes in the whole episode is he sets up a meeting with Sarah Connor, and Sarah has some clothes sent to him. So yeah. So Riker's in the little condo with Troy and Tasha, and they're like, you're not going to wear this, are you? And Riker's like, of course. Yeah. Of course, I do this all the time. I was on that one planet wearing feathers, and I was on that other planet wearing, like, spiky shoulder pads. Like, he like, lists off all these examples of times where he's worn crazy shit.
You're not going to wear that.
Of course. Part of this mission is diplomatic. I have requested an audience with the head of state, and I will honor her by wearing... Indigenous apparel. Oh,
I don't believe this. You're going to put that thing on and parade around like one of them?
Why, what is this attitude? On Kibatris, I had to wear furs to meet with the leadership council. And on Armus 9, I wore feathers.
So he ducks behind the partition, puts on the costume, and it is like, it is awesome. It's a plunging V that would make the American Apparel people blush. Like, it V's it V's all the way down to the crotch, and then it's
patterns
sort of,
and colors that would make them very excited.
Yeah, it exposes just the left nipple.
Yeah,
and boy, like, as
prodigious
as a man who cannot grow a beard, I see how hairy one Commander Riker is, and I'm like, God, I just wish I could do that. Like, very envious of that going on. So he's like, don't worry. I've got this cool costume and a meeting set up. I'm going to keep it professional. So he goes out to hang with Sarah Connor, who, like, immediately puts the moves on him, like, in a pretty evident, like, shit's going to go down, right?
Yeah.
They lay on the bed. They're talking together. Riker actually calls what he's doing diplomatic relations, which is great. Like, it's almost like smile and wink at the camera before turning back to Sarah Connor and making out. And they do one of the classic Naked Gun transitions. Like, they don't dissolve to an oil derrick pumping, but
or
they,
a train going into a tunnel.
But they do like a 2 second, like a full 2 second dissolve to a campfire while we're back with the Ramsey's character.
Yeah.
Oh, it was really nice. I enjoyed that scene quite a bit.
Yeah. I would say that the other really genuinely enjoyable moment in this episode is the scene when Worf is sneezing on the bridge, because they dub in like like amplified lion roars every time he sneezes. But I love the, like, Worf is you know, a big dude, but he's not like significantly huger than anybody else on the ship, but they make it sound like his sneezes are deafening and audible throughout the Enterprise. Like,
they sound Geordi, super
Geordi
cool.
Implies that other people in other parts of the ship can hear him.
Engineering reports, computer mouth. I'm sorry. I'm getting sick.
I'm sure half the ship knows that by now. Report to sick bay, Lieutenant.
Engineering to bridge.
This is also the second episode in a row where there's sneeze humor. Like, we didn't go over it last time, but in the Data Lore episode, one of the scenes is Data standing in front of a mirror trying to sound authentic when he sneezes, and he can't quite pull it off. I feel like there's a writer in that writer's room that's constantly trying to force in some sneeze references, because this is two in a row now.
It's either that, or there's a writer that everybody hates that's constantly sneezing, and they're kind of subliminally writing it into episodes.
God, Dave is so stupid. God, I can't believe he came to work sick. Now he's going to get all of us sick.
Yeah. I think that the thing that I think is interesting about this episode, you know, it's sort of on its face meant to be kind of thought-provoking about gender issues, and I don't think it quite succeeds at that. But it does raise some interesting ideas about, like, freedom of movement. And I think that, like, the Federation has pretty interesting standards with regard to that. Like, there's, you know, they can't just tell one of their citizens, like, what planet they can and can't be on, which, you know, has got to be kind of a headache for Starfleet if they're going around trying to enforce the Prime Directive. But anybody that's outside of their command structure is not bound by it. And you know, like, there's plenty of people in the Federation that have spaceships that can get to these planets. So it's I don't know. I thought that was interesting. It's an interesting thought experiment. It sort of makes you think about, like, an individual's rights to movement, and I thought it was, like, maybe unintentionally more thought provoking than it needed to be on that tip.
I like the idea of unintentional thought provoking. That's great. I think you're right. And this is another example, I feel like, of the show bringing up an issue but not really going all the way in on it. I mean, is it enough to have an episode concerning gender roles and relations and have Riker fuck one of the women? Like, is it enough to have an episode that has some racial inequality references and then have a super clumsy fight to the death with the people? Like, the show at this point seems to raise the conversation, but doesn't really take it seriously enough to resolve it in any satisfying way. They just sort of, they bring up the topic and then they sort of play it out in their own way, and they don't resolve it in a way that satisfies, at least at this point. I think we both know that this show gets a lot better at that kind of stuff. But for now, I think it sort of seems satisfied enough to just sort of have it involved, but not be able to really have a message about it one way or the other.
Well, I have good news for you, Adam. We are officially across the halfway point for season one. And, you know, not to say it's all downhill from here, but...
this is where we're setting up base camp?
Yeah, exactly. We'll acclimatize for the rest of the journey from this point.
Is that what those headaches have been about up until now?
Yeah. That and the autoerotic asphyxiation belt you have around your neck.
Right, right. Don't leave home without it.
Damok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Junction Mode is the time in the show where we recognize an achievement in character development that could be, you know, a character having the most fun or doing something we don't understand or just being weird. So,
right.
So, Ben, do you have a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I really struggled to come up with one. I didn't write one down. Grasping at straws, I'm going to say it's maybe the combination of Yar and Troy, who sort of reduce themselves to giggling like schoolgirls when they see Riker dress up in the traditional costume of this society. And I feel like it's maybe like just, I don't know. It seems like if the gender roles were reversed, it would be like a really disgusting show of male chauvinism. And you would think that a writer that is going to tackle an episode where the society is misandrist in the way our society is misogynist would have the wit to see what they're doing in that moment.
Yeah. That's a great nom, and I agree with you on those points. To me, no one else could be drunk Shimoda besides Riker, because he's got that confidence of, I think we all know this person, like the guy at the party who's like, "No, man, I'm fine to drive. I'm all right. Like nothing bad's gonna happen to me." And that scene to me is the scene where he puts on the costume and somehow makes the case that he's not gonna go fuck Sarah Connor in that moment. Yeah. Like, no, it's diplomatic relations. I promise. Like, everything's gonna be cool. Like, he's got that level of bullshit hanging off of him. While his nipple is hanging out. And to me, nothing could be more drunk Shimoda than that.
Yeah, it's just so, I mean, you know, if I'm standing in a room with that man looking at that nappy nest of chest hair, I'll believe anything he tells me.
Yeah, yeah, eating it up. Come with me if you want to live.
Come with me or come on?
I am Locutus of Borg. You are Borg. I am Locutus of Borg. You will assist us.
Ben, what do we got coming up next on the next exciting episode?
So the next episode is entitled 11001001, which at the end of Datalore, they're like off to go get their computer refit. And I feel like this was what they were talking about. So the Enterprise is hijacked by an alien species who need the ship's computer to regenerate the one damaged on their own planet. So what I remember about this episode is that the species are called the Binars, and there's a pair. They're like in pair groups, and they are super advanced and speak to their pair-bonded counterpart in binary code and are great at fixing computers, but their own computer is fucked up and it's killing their planet. So they decide to hijack the Enterprise. And the way they distract the crew is, I guess most of the crew is on shore leave, but they get Picard and Riker kind of duking it out over a babe in the holodeck.
I remember this episode better than maybe any other episode in the first season. And honestly, I think it might be one of my favorite episodes of the whole season. I love it. And and the reason is, like, it's a heist episode.
Totally.
And
I love, like, a good heist.
Yeah. The idea of stealing a starship, like, I thought was super cool. And the idea that, and even more, like, no one's on board the ship except for Riker and Picard, as far as I remember. So, like, you're on this giant ship, you're by yourself, it's been hijacked. Like, I think that's just cool no matter what genre you're in. And for that reason, it's one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. The release, or the reception, I mean, was just as favorable. I mean, people are saying it came very close to being a really good episode. And easily season one's best and most memorable.
Right.
What do you think? Do you like it?
I like it. I remember that lady being a real attractive babe, and there's a lot about
Minuet,
character.
Right?
Minuet, right? It's like set in a jazz club, I think. So there's a lot of Riker playing his trombone, which is always fun.
The trombone, of course, being the soprano sax of brass instruments in terms of of suggestiveness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like an interesting alien species that they're interacting with. Maybe a little bit preposterous that the alien species that is best at computers is the one that needs help with their computer, but I forget quite how they justify it, so maybe that's okay.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to rewatching this.
Me too.
As we stagger to the finish, I just want to thank everyone for listening. And if you have any thoughts or comments, be sure to reach out to us on the Twitters. I'm Cut for Time. Ben is Benjamin R. AHR. Yeah. Is that your Twitter handle? Am I correct in that?
That's correct. Yeah, and we've been using the hashtag #GreatestGen, which is kind of an embarrassment because there's a lot of people mourning their World War II fighting grandfathers on it, but also us making dumb Star Trek jokes. So
it's a real good mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've ever had an awkward moment at the Thanksgiving table with your grandpa, it's basically the Twitter equivalent of that.
Yeah. So go check that out. Leave us an iTunes review if you really want to stick it to us and make even more people listen to this embarrassing, embarrassing show.
Yeah, we got a great review that I just read, which was calling this the real life equivalent of the Chris Farley Show, which was my favorite review that I've read so far. So I just want to say thank you for that. And do you remember that time where we recorded a Star Trek podcast, Ben?
Yeah.
That was awesome. That's about it for me. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
See you next time.
See you next week. Car.